Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 29th of October, 2021. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are National Express to return to city, Council taking action over shared houses, and future of historic gateway in focus. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Daphne?
Yes. National Express is looking to resume services to and from Winchester following a backlash when they were cancelled. National Express will trial one of Winchester's park and ride car parks as a stop-off for services to and from the city. It follows social media criticism that such a major city was not covered by the company. Journeys were cancelled at a day's notice last month when services were suspended. The Chronicle recently reported that Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council were in talks with National Express to best determine how services could resume. The company had cancelled all Winchester operations last month after it deemed its new six-wheel coaches were too large for the stop near King Alfred's statue at the Broadway. Currently, the nearest pick-up points are at Southampton West Quay and Southampton University. At the recent Cabinet meeting, Councillor Martin Todd, portfolio holder for economic recovery, revealed National Express are running a new set of trials for potential options to resume services in Winchester. We will be looking at our park and ride sites and a couple more central routes into the city. We are looking at how to solve the problem of the new large six-wheel coaches in a medieval centre. A statement from National Express said, "We visited proposed locations last week and carried out a full review of their suitability as a new stop for National Express in Winchester. The council have been very supportive in our efforts to resume services, and we are now discussing the findings of the assessment and our recommendations with them. We are hopeful we will be able to confirm a decision soon. The exact location of the trial new pickup point has not been revealed."
Council taking action over shared houses. Winchester civic chiefs are taking action to control the increase in shared houses for rent on one city street. City councillors and householders are growing concerned by the increase in houses in multiple occupation, HMOs, on Chalk Ridge in Highcliffe. The Cabinet has agreed to make an Article 4 direction, which will make it harder for developers to convert family homes. They must put in a formal planning application instead of relying on permitted development rights. Such restrictions have already been placed in Stanmore and Winnall, but this is the first time the City Council has made one for a single road. The Lib Dem-controlled Cabinet heard that 5 of the 38 houses are now HMOs, with the 6th one being converted, and residents say that has led to a change in the character of the street, with an increase in antisocial behaviour. Local resident Mike Robinson said, "Chalk Ridge is a pretty unique in many ways, because of its geography. It is like a village, and we have developed quite a strong community. People felt safe Children played in the streets and there was a strong community spirit. Now people do not feel safe. Children don't play in the street and the sense of community is being eroded. The reason is the increase in the number of HMOs. Mr. Robinson said a 3-bed family home had become a 5-bed HMO, a 4-bed house had become a 7-bed HMO, and a 3-bed house had become a 6-bed HMO. A planning application for 32 Chalk Ridge seeks to convert it into a 9-bed HMO. He added, with larger HMOs, there has been a big increase in antisocial behaviour and criminal behaviour, drugs issues and physical assaults, and more traffic with parcel and takeaway deliveries. It is encouraging speculators to pick up affordable houses. We have tried to engage with developers, but they are not really talking to us. Without the adoption of Article 4, we fear things will develop out of hand. We urge you to support Article 4 and give us our community back. Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith, Cabinet Member for the Built Environment, told the meeting that the new direction would not stop any more HMOs, but give the council and local people more control over any changes. The direction will come into force in 12 months' time, otherwise the council could be sued by developers for financial loss. An estate agent spoke against the measure. Alison Broderick, associate at Savills, speaking for the HMO landlords on Chalk Ridge, said it was unnecessary, with the percentage of HMOs at 16%, below the usual trigger for control in one street, which is 25%.
Future of historic gateway in focus. The future of a historic gateway in Winchester was the focus of a public consultation as campaigners press for it to be given a new lease of life. Hyde Gate is one of only two remaining structures of Hyde Abbey, the medieval monastery where King Alfred the Great was reburied. It is now best noted as a pigeon roost, a place for drug dealing, and a public urinal. On Saturday, a consultation event was held in the precincts of Hyde Abbey as part of Hyde 900's King Alfred weekend. Following widely expressed concerns about the condition of the gate and the antisocial behaviour which takes place in and around it, four local groups, including 900, Hyde 900, the Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, the Friends of Hyde Gate and St Bartholomew's Church, came together with Winchester City councillors John Tippett Cooper and Kathleen Becker, along with County Councillor Dominic Hiscock, to test out public opinion and discuss the options ahead. A number of displays were on show to illustrate and specify possible improvements, but visitors also had the opportunity to see for themselves the dangerous decay to surfaces and the threat posed by the numerous perching pigeons which have infested the gate in recent years. Mike Caldwell, Hyde 900 organiser of the event, said, "The Hyde Gate House consultation was a very worthwhile exercise, and it was great to be able to hear views from residents, both local and from further afield, on the current state of the gatehouse and what its future use could be." Edward Fennell from the Friends of Hyde Gate said, "The tenor of public reaction was consistent." He continued, "From the comments expressed in the course of the afternoon, it was overwhelmingly clear that people realise the urgent need for investment in the gate to clean it up and make it safe for visitors." Local resident Becky Oliver added, "We support the charter for Hyde Gate, the Friends of Hyde Gate's proposal for improvement. The site is an amazing piece of history that does seem a bit overlooked." The future of the Gateway and the Hyde Abbey precincts is now high on the agenda of the new Town Forum Heritage Group, which has been set up by Winchester City Council. Speaking on behalf of the St Bartholomew's councillors, Councillor Tippett Cooper said, "Hydegate is one of Winchester's heritage gems, and it's brilliant that Friends of Hydegate and Hyde 900 have been engaging the public about its future. It's exciting that steps are now underway to restore this wonderful site, with pigeon proofing due to be installed in the first week of November, after a surprisingly challenging process of obtaining the relevant consents. However, there's still a lot of work to be done, and we will need to work together as a community to ensure that Hyde Gate is properly preserved and enhanced."
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Edgerton, Ian Geoffrey Edgerton, peacefully in hospital, aged 94. Elms, Leslie Arthur Elms, at Basingstoke Hospital, aged 89. Griffin, Jean Griffin, peacefully at home, aged 84. And White, Stephen Robert James White, aged 88. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And it's entitled Standing Before the Court of God, and it comes from Liz Tatum. Excuse me. A friend of mine who lectures in astronomy told me that his course on galaxies is very popular among the students at his university. I am not surprised. To study and enter into that amazing and seemingly endless feature of our universe, our home, of which our planet is a dot in a bigger dot in an unimaginably vast collection of galaxies, would be my choice of module two. Somewhere on the edge of a galaxy in that enormity is an ordinary solar system with an extraordinary planet, which is perfectly designed to give life to our fellow creatures and us. Or turning that around, we are perfectly made to live here. With COP26 coming up soon, I have to say something about the stewardship of that planet, our home, the duty of all of us, people of faith or no faith. As Christians, we believe that God created and we are his creatures. We share that fundamental belief among people of many faiths. It seems fairly obvious, if you believe in God, to understand that he is a creator who made all we see and all we are. As Christians, we are asked by Pope Francis in his encyclical Laudato Si, concerning the care of our home, to enter into kinship with our fellow creatures. That means kinship with all people and all living things. Christians enter into this relationship through their belief in Jesus Christ, both God and man, showing their love for him and each other. We have traditionally taken an attitude of dominion over the planet, with the right to take, destroy, and deplete anything we choose. We now hear daily in the media of a rising and irresistible trend to reverse that thinking and become more like stewards and carers of our environment. That call comes from royals, celebrities, and ordinary people. This is especially heard from the young, who have to inherit our legacy. Laudato Si implores us to ensure social justice to our brothers and sisters who suffer because of the irresponsibility we have shown until now. There are many available images of desertification, plastic mountains, disappearing islands, and all manner of effects from thoughtless ways and expectations of living. I listened to a Radio 4 programme yesterday about the legacy of the Nuremberg trials, and how in the 7 decades since the first trials of those accused of crimes against many millions, there is now a strong movement to add the crime of ecocide to those which can be brought to the International Criminal Court, or the ICC. This would make a fifth category of devastating crimes against humanity. Imagine an eco-crime of pollution, ravaging of resources, deforestation, and so on. I don't expect anything you or I do individually will be taken to The Hague, but what do we do by absence of thought and by greed for our own comfort and convenience? Could we stand before the court of God and say we were always responsible and thoughtful of this gift from God, our home? I can't, but with his help, I will be trying harder in my everyday life to make my difference.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Nick. Thank you, Nick.
Yes, this one's from Tony Sinclair, and it's about leisure access. Sir, I'm right following the article in the October 14 issue of Chronicle, wherein there were concerns expressed by elderly and disabled persons who find it difficult to access the new leisure centre. The person interviewed, Mr. Harcourt Williams, is quite right in saying that the WCC spokesperson is missing the point. Whilst it is admirable that the City Council has arranged for people to use the park and ride for free if they say they are travelling to and from the leisure centre, it is not reasonable to expect elderly and disabled persons to walk to and from the bus stops in Barfield Close and the leisure centre. I feel Councillor Todd is not actually listening to the genuine difficulties some people may be encountering. Although I am 72, I do not consider myself elderly, but for the past 20 months I have been struggling with a seriously arthritic hip. I am due to have a hip replacement next February, but in the meantime, even I would struggle to walk the half mile between the Barfield Park and Ride and the leisure centre. I dread to think what it must be like for older, frail people with a permanent disability to try the same journey, especially if they have failing eyesight. I understand WCC has to work with Hampshire County Council and other organisations such as Stagecoach. It may even involve tweaking local bylaws, but surely it cannot be beyond the wit of council staff to have the park and ride buses rerouted at Barfield Close roundabout into and out of the leisure centre car park? Alternatively, could the council and Stagecoach reroute the number 4 Highcliffe bus into and out of the leisure centre car park? This would be doing something practical to come up with a solution to resolve the concerns of a particular section of our community, namely the elderly and disabled, who desperately want and need to access the facilities at our brand new excellent leisure centre. Listen to what people are saying, Councillor Todd, and put yourself in their shoes. And that one is from Anthony Sinclair, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell, Winchester.
The next letter is from Clive Thompsett of New Road, Littleton, and it's about the Andover Road. Sir, Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council has indicated that they will not oppose, in principle, the redevelopment of the 40 hectares of brownfield, previously developed part of the Flowerdown site. They have suggested the creation of a 25-hectare nature reserve in the northern part of the site. This imaginative idea has considerable local support, and it is good to see our MP Steve Brine and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust also support it. It would be good to know the position of the Winchester City Council. If houses are built on Flowerdown, numbers unknown, considerable traffic bottlenecks will occur. Andover Road into Winchester. The plan, rightly, is to have access and egress for Flowerdown onto the Andover Road. This will present two problems. A, traffic will turn right and after half a mile will be directed to turn left and snake through the Kingsbarton estate. That road is narrow, very close to houses, and bisects the community, thus hazarding the safety of children and pedestrians. A crazy proposal. Most communities seek a bypass, but for Kingsbarton, a bypass is being routed through the community. Additional flower down traffic makes it essential that this decision is reversed and traffic continues southwards, undiverted, on the Andover Road. Point B. Andover Road ends at the five-way traffic lights at the start of the City Road in Winchester. Already this is very congested, and the addition of traffic from another 1,750 houses from Kingsbarton and the unknown number from Flowerdown will not be accommodated. The City Council need to address this problem. It should also be noted that around two times each year there is a breakdown or accident on the A34. When that happens, all southbound traffic, including car transporters, HGVs, etc., is diverted down the Andover Road through Winchester and back onto the motorway near Twyford. The prospect of this, plus the two new estates traffic, all passing nose to tail through Kingsbarton Estate, beggars belief. That's from Clive Thompson of Littleton.
And the next item is headed Our NHS, and it comes from Peter Rees. Sir, both the head of Health and Social Care, Sajid Javid, and two parliamentary committees have publicly acknowledged the extreme pressure being experienced by the NHS and the response to COVID as the greatest public health disaster. It is already experiencing a very early onset of factors potentially leading to collapse. Recent pronouncements have failed to indicate exactly what steps are going to be taken to reform social care, the unfortunate location of so many bed shortages, and other issues profoundly impacting upon the daily operational performance of NHS hospitals. Suggesting a league table for hospitals and removal of hard-pressed cash-strapped CEOs is not the answer. The current state of the NHS is a national scandal. 98,000 posts unfilled, 22,000 bed cuts since 2010, plus 5,212 mental health beds, 5.7 million people waiting for a procedure or operation, rising to 7 million by 2022, £37 billion lost during COVID test and trace debacle, £131 billion given to non-NHS firms, £81 billion given to profit-making private health corporations, £10 billion given to private companies owned by Tory MPs and associates, 125 A and E departments, types 1 and 3, closed. These are a few of the staggering statistics daily reminding the public. The wasted money, cancelled operations, the delays, the failures, suggested further reorganisations, the closures, and above all, the 11-year decimation of the workforce and bed cuts. No matter how important the news of further investment may be, the staff are simply not there and cannot be trained quickly enough to address these major deficiencies. And that comes from Peter Rees, a member of the Labour Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
Charles Jennings writes now on effluent. Sir, last week, Winchester MP Steve Brine voted against the House of Lords amendment to the Environment Bill that would have put beyond all doubt the legal obligation of water companies have, that water companies have, to stop pumping raw sewage into the UK's rivers and coastal waters. Last year, the government's Environment Agency reported 400,000 sewage pollution events across the UK. The agency's chief executive has recently said he would be, quote, cautious about swimming in an English river. Wild swimmers take note. The Lords Amendment to the Environment Bill would have forced water companies to phase out their CSO, combined sewage overflow, get out of jail clause, and tackle the increasing water pollution problem we're facing. Legislation is undoubtedly the only way that this problem will be solved. 9 years ago, the European Court of Justice ruled that the UK was operating illegally and water companies should only use CSOs in exceptional circumstances. Of course, that ruling no longer applies in the UK. The new measures being pushed through by our government are weakening the previous European legislation. Mr. Brine and his colleagues voted for this to happen. Private water companies distribute hundreds of millions of pounds to their executives and shareholders each year. The government's approach is to ask them to behave nicely. Anyone likely to bet that the strategy will work? And that's from Charles Jennings, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter comes from New Zealand, from Roy and Lynn Abbott, Wangapareoa, Auckland, New Zealand, and it's entitled Hide Memories. Sir, we have just read the article concerning the closure of Hyde News Agency in the Chronicle on October the 7th. We owned the business in the 1980s, having bought the news agency from Bill and Doris Vine, and we left Winchester for the shores of New Zealand in April 1991, where we still live today. My mum, Stella Cooney, is living at Pack Hill now, aged 98, and my gran, Edith Brooks, died in Winchester, aged 104. Both of them helped out in our family business, as did our daughters Jane and Emma. Jane lives in Alton, and Emma and her husband own a dog boarding kennels here in Taupo, New Zealand. We had a wonderful 10 years at the Hyde News. Hard work, long hours, but we met so many amazing people whom we often talk about with fond memories. Times are changing, but we are sure that wonderful property will remain for many more years.
And this letter is headed, Do We Need New Shops in the City? And it comes from Richard Gibson. And it's very short. Sir, today I walked around Winchester City Centre and counted and photographed 24 empty shop units. I also read recently that retail sales nationally have fallen considerably. Why then do new developments like Saxon Gate, that is Silver Hill, continue with the very 20th century idea of having masses of new retail space? Winchester doesn't need it. Much better to keep the old city centre shops occupied. And that's from Richard Gibson, North Walls, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Nick. Thank you, Nick.
And the title is Good Decision on Chalk Ridge. It's a follow-on to one of our headline articles. The decision by the Cabinet at the City Council to confirm an Article 4 direction for Chalk Ridge in Highcliffe is to be welcomed. What it does is remove permitted development rights that has been used by developers to convert the houses into homes of multiple occupation, better known as HMOs. This will not stop other houses being converted, but it means that full planning applications will have to be submitted, assessed by planning officers, and a decision made by elected councillors on the planning committee. The freedom for developers was introduced by the government to supposedly remove the bureaucratic shackles of local government. As we report on page 3, residents in Chalkridge had felt helpless at the increase in HMOs, which they say has led to an increase in antisocial behaviour, crime, traffic, and the erosion of community spirit. We also report on page 10 public criticism of the local planning system, with people unhappy about how developers can do what they want. Many people feel ignored and disconnected to the planning process. The Chalk Ridge decision will help to deal with this.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises two items, the first of which is read by Frieda.
This part is called From Tupelo to Full Flood. The story of how a Mississippi musician came to be taken to the heart of Winchester's artistic community is an inspiring one. John Murray first came to the area performing murder ballads as a duo with Bob Frank in Southampton in 2007. It was not an auspicious initial visit, as he was then in the throes of a debilitating heroin addiction and had to be prevented by audience members from strangling the sound engineer at the Talking Heads. Nevertheless, he struck up an unlikely friendship with Winchester music promoter Oliver Gray, which has endured to this day. Hailing originally from Tupelo in Mississippi, the birthplace of Elvis Presley, Murray was in Oakland, California when his heart stopped after an overdose, inspiring the acclaimed 2012 post-addiction album The Graceless Age. In a career that has endured more downs than ups, Murray found himself earlier this year in the UK album charts with his newest LP, The Stars Are God's Bullet Holes. Even more astonishing was then being featured proposing to his girlfriend in an interview with The Guardian, which stretched across 2 full pages. Bizarrely, the success of the entire album project came about largely as a result of his relationship with the city of Winchester, and specifically its iconic music venue, the Railway Inn, which was where he met almost everyone involved in its production. John explains, "The shows I've played there have launched new musical beginnings, giving me real insight into possibilities, new directions and new records. I have met amazing people for the first time at the Railway. My producer and friend John Parrish, Felix, my label boss and friend, my backup vocalist Nadun Khoury, and Tally Tro, a true musical compatriot. It's a special place and precious to me in so many ways. John, now living in Brighton and clean for many years, returns to Winchester on November the 20th as part of the tour to launch the new album. His feelings for the area are deep and sincere. I love Winchester and Hampshire in general for vaguely spiritual and familial reasons. The people I see there are not fans, they're friends and family. Since 2007, I've played at the Railway more than any other venue in the world, and it's always like going home. There are some truly brilliant people there, whose lives I feel I'm a part of, just as they are a huge part of mine, and they have a strong influence on the music I make. I love the railway and I love Winchester because I know that we are all working together towards a common goal and are all in it together.
And the second part of Belgarum is headed Council Set to Exploit Popular Assassin's Creed. Winchester City Council is backing efforts to capitalise on the city's link with the best-selling video game Assassin's Creed Valhalla. The Chronicle has reported how Hampshire Cultural Trust is working with the game's creators for an educational spin-off. The game is set in Winchester, and players can also explore the city's history. The City Council hopes this will give a boost to tourism, and it has agreed to give £75,000 to the Trust towards its Anglo-Saxon experience, which will open in late 2022. It will give an interactive insight into Anglo-Saxon Winchester. Councillor Martin Todd, portfolio holder for economic recovery, told the Cabinet, "Assassin's Creed Valhalla is the best-selling game in the world. Gaming is bigger than the movie industry. Winchester plays a central role within it. King Alfred plays a central role. Around the world, millions of people have been made aware of Winchester and our heritage. Having a way for them to put Winchester on their itinerary has enormous potential for the visitor economy and our high street." Councillor Linda Murphy told Cabinet that tourists visiting London could be tempted to visit. "Lots of teenagers and young people will say, 'Let's visit Winchester.' The £75,000 is a good investment for our city." The HCT is looking to develop a visitor attraction based on the city's Anglo-Saxon heritage when it was the capital, first of Wessex and later England. For some 10 years, the English project has aimed to showcase the development of the English language with the first ever museum dedicated to the subject.
Now, this week's announcements. Please remember that clocks go back 1 hour this weekend, so you can have an extra hour lie-in on Sunday morning. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 29th of October 2021 at 7:53 a.m. and begins at 5:45 p.m. On Thursday the 4th of November, it ends at 7:02 a.m. and begins at 4:35 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Okay. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Nick.
Yes, Eco Choir heading to COP26. A children's Eco Choir, including two youngsters from King's Worthy, will perform at the COP26 Climate Summit. Some will even sing to world leaders. SOS from the Kids, who featured on Britain's Got Talent in 2020, will travel to Glasgow next week, having been invited by the Cabinet Office to perform. The choir is made up of around 20 children aged between 4 and 18 from across Hampshire, including Henry Beaufort pupils Bronwyn, 15, and Colleen, 12. Mum Sandra Swanson said, "There is obviously a sense of pride that their messages and voices have been so well received by different groups. It is clear that the policy makers need to be moved to act. At the end of the day, they are all people and they all have hearts. And a group, the choir, like this, have the capacity to speak to those hearts. And for that reason, their presence will be of value. They will be a part of something that is not about anger. It is about hope. I think they have a major part to play in this major event. Some of the members will perform in the Blue Zone, which is the UN-managed space, and will sing to world leaders and policymakers. The whole choir will then perform together in the more public Green Zone. Throughout lockdown, the choir have been releasing and recording songs, and more recently have performed at Shakespeare's Globe in London, invited onto BBC's The One Show, and joined Chris Packham to deliver a 100,000-strong petition to Buckingham Palace, asking the royals to rewild their land. To be able to go to the event, the choir have to raise funds to not only get there, but also to cover accommodation and general expenses for while they're in Glasgow for 3 days. So far, the group has raised just over £2,000, but it is hoping to reach its £4,000 target ahead of the conference. And that piece is attached by a smiling picture of the four of the singers and their organiser in the middle. So it includes Bronwyn and Colleen.
This piece is entitled Walkers Raise Over £100,000 for Children's Hospices. Over 300 people strapped on their walking boots and trekked along the Clarendon Way Walk last month in aid of local children's hospices. People from all walks of life turned up to show their support, including the High Sheriffs for Wiltshire and Hampshire, who both took part in the event, to raise money for life-limited children and young people who use the hospices at Naomi House and Jack's Place. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Attwell, arrived early in the morning to cheer walkers on. The annual fundraising event, organised and delivered by the hospices, was this year made possible by the generous support from local businesses, volunteers and Winchester's Army Training Regiment. As well as having family-friendly distances along the route, there were options for those who wanted a greater challenge. A nighttime walk, 26 miles, and an ultra-distance walk from Salisbury Cathedral to Winchester Cathedral and back again, a whopping 52 miles. Charlotte Patrick, senior event fundraiser for Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "This year we embarked on creating two new distances for our flagship event, Clarendon Way Walk. The whole event was an exciting challenge for our team at Naomi House and Jack's Place. Feedback from participants has been wonderful, with many already signed up for next year's events. I would like to say a tremendous thank you to all of those who supported the event by either walking or volunteering. We couldn't have done it without you." There are three pictures, all showing very happy-looking families, individuals and groups wearing smart yellow advertising T-shirts. So it seems to have been a great success.
No promise made for Leisure Park bus stop. The City Council has said that the nearest bus stop for the new Winchester Sport and Leisure Park has already been relocated to make it more convenient, in quotes. As previously reported, criticism is mounting over the lack of convenient public transport to the new multi-million pound centre in Bar End for those with disabilities and unable to drive. Twyford resident Simon Harcourt Williams and acquaintances are said to be joining forces to create a pressure group to urge Winchester City Council to install a bus stop at the new facility. Mr. Harcourt Williams claimed that the authority previously promised to install a stop, but this has been denied by the City Council. The council has said that it has started a free travel trial with Stagecoach to encourage residents to use the park and ride service to visit the new leisure facility. The trial will run until Sunday, November the 14th, meaning residents can now catch a Winchester Park and Ride bus between the Broadway and Barfield Close and travel for free, just by telling the driver where they are travelling. In response to calls for a bus stop at the centre, Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "The Council looked at various options for getting a bus service to the leisure centre, but considered Park and Ride to be the best option because of how often it runs. In terms of where bus stops were positioned, there wasn't a plan or a commitment to place an extra one at the Winchester Sport and Leisure Park. To make it more convenient, the bus stop was moved out of the Barfield Park and Ride to reduce the walking distance, so it's now a 3 or 4 minute walk. This free bus trial between the Broadway and Barfield Close will give us a good sense of how well this route works for local people. And if it shows further adjustments are needed, we'll look at them then." In response to the lack of a bus stop, one reader on the Chronicle's website said, "With a new facility, all of these issues should have been taken into account, but obviously were not. Having a bus stop at the new leisure centre seems to be one of the most obvious and sensible things to do, and no obfuscation by the City Council will hide the fact that they have got it wrong." In last week's Chronicle, Councillor Todd highlighted in a letter the distance between the Barfield Close bus stop and the new leisure centre compared to the stop on North Walls that would have been used to access River Park Leisure Centre when it was open. Councillor Todd said that the walk from Barfield Close to the Leisure Park is 2 minutes and 22 seconds, compared with 3 minutes and 39 seconds to River Park.
Shedders rise to the challenge and win clock competition. A group of shedders have risen to the challenge and are celebrating success in a Europe-wide clockmaking competition. Members of the Worthies Community Shed took part in the Step-by-Step Clockworks Challenge, organised by Hampshire County Council, against men's sheds and similar groups from the UK, France, Belgium and the Netherlands. Following completion, the group's clock was awarded joint first place along with a French team. Four members of the Worthies Community Shed got involved, with just a few weeks to design and make the clock. The team's clock sits at around 1 metre high and has a head which rotates once per hour. Member Eddie Smith said, "This proved difficult as the head is relatively heavy, so all drive components had to be able to cope with the weight and stress in turning the head. It also has a pendulum, which is a monkey's fist made in purple paracord. The colour and the knot were chosen to represent the scout group where the Kingsworthy Community Shed is located." And that article is accompanied by a picture showing the four gentlemen, John Leakes, Kai Bushby, Eddie Smith and Stephen Lyon. And behind them, you can see the clock, which is composed, it looks like, of three parts. The bottom part, which obviously holds the pendulum, being a log turned on its end, and it's been carved into a cylindrical shape. So that holds the pendulum. On top of that sits a small oblong box which has got the clock face on it, but above that is a rather magnificent bearded head with a boater style black hat sat on its top, all carved out of wood, and it looks absolutely amazing.
We hear that the flagship council estate is to celebrate its 100th anniversary. Winchester's flagship council estate is set to mark its 100th birthday as more new houses are completed. In November 1923, the Prince of Wales, who later became the future King Edward VIII, formally opened the Stanmore development, planting a tree to mark the occasion. The first properties to be built were in Cromwell Road and Prince's Place at the start of the 1920s, with additional dwellings added to the estate over time. The rent for a two-bedroomed house was 11 and sixpence, and for a three-bedroom property 15 shillings and threepence, which was expensive at the time. But prices were reduced a year later when the Poor Laws introduced affordable housing in 1921. Hampshire Advertiser published an article on June 12, 1920, writing that the housing plans would be the most sought after in Winchester because they were beautifully placed. Development plans for Stanmore were shown at the Wembley Exhibition in 1922. The properties were designed to be progressive and modern, with bathrooms having both hot and cold water. A century on, the estate continues to grow in a modern and eco-friendly way, as the council breathes new life into the flagship estate, with a mix of shared ownership and social rent flats and houses. The Valley development has provided 77 new affordable homes, with a mix of 1, 2 and 3-bedroomed flats, 2 and 3-bedroomed houses, and a 3-bedroomed bungalow. The new development is low carbon and energy efficient, with solar panels and electric vehicle charging points. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "Stanmore Estate is soon to celebrate its 100th anniversary. So I'm thrilled that at this point of reflection, we're able to look forward to the Valley development providing much-needed homes for local families and individuals. Winchester City Council has continued its commitment to high-quality, modern-designed housing." There are two photographs. Firstly, a small one, which shows in the distance some very smart-looking houses with people wandering about on the open space in front of them. And then there is a slightly bigger picture, which is quite hard to read, and it shows three men with their hats in their hands, and the one at the front of the three appears to be opening the door of a property. Hard to read, but interesting.
Abandoned pups take first step to finding new homes. The South Downs Way abandoned puppies have been moved to a dog rescue charity. It is the first step for the young dogs to be found permanent homes. The Chronicle revealed how 7 canines were found on the footpath near Chesford Head on Wednesday, October the 13th, by cyclist Rob Carter. An 8th was found near Alsford Golf Club the following Sunday. They were taken to 3 Oaks boarding kennels near Bishop's Waltham, where they are said to have thrived. The kennels provides the stray dog service for Winchester City Council. How and why they got to the South Downs Way is unclear, and the police have had no reports of theft. A City Council spokesman said, "The 8 puppies that were abandoned have come on in leaps and bounds over their week with us. They put on weight, grew healthier, happier and naughtier by the day. They have been sent to a dog rescue charity where they all have foster homes waiting for them. They will need to be assessed, rehabilitated and prepared for the time when they will be ready to go to a new home." The charity has asked not to be named, as there is a lot of work to do before the puppies will be ready for rehoming. "We are very grateful to the public for their inquiries and concern for the puppies and those who donated blankets, food and toys to help with their care." And there's a lovely picture to go with that of the puppies with the staff from the boarding kennels. There are two very dark gold and two sort of tawny, and the others are a creamy colour. I would say they're Labradors, but there might be something else in there.
Railway goods shed set to be revamped. The future of the last major part of a long-gone Winchester railway line has been secured. The City Council has decided to redevelop the goods shed and its yard on Barfield Close as mixed offices and industrial units. The shed once serviced the line and was close to the Winchester Chesil station, on which the multi-storey car park now stands. Much of the Didcot, Newbury and Southampton line was bought by the council when the line closed in the 1960s. In recent years, the council considered a collaboration with the university as a start-up centre for graduates. At Cabinet, Councillor Kelsey Learney, portfolio holder for Housing and Asset Management, said, "Our intention is to retain and refurbish the goods shed, one of the few buildings left of the Didcot, Newbury and Southampton line. I don't think my husband would have forgiven me if I proposed to knock it down." There is a shortage of quality small industrial units. Unfortunately, many landowners are holding out for redevelopment as housing. She said housing was considered, but added, "The location is ideal for employment. It is sited in an industrial area with good public transport and close to the road network." Councillor Learney said the asset would make money for the council and a final business case would now be drawn up after Cabinet agreed the proposal. Councillor Martin Todd said the redevelopment gave the opportunity to improve the footpath from Barfield Close into Domham Road. The council is encouraging users of the nearby park and ride car parks to walk into the city centre. And that piece is accompanied by a photograph of the goods shed in Barfield Close. Quite a long building, actually. Looks probably about 60 or 70 metres long, I would say, with a couple of big doorways. About to be done up.
This piece is headed Majestic and Fearless. The last Amur leopard dies at the zoo. Marwell Zoo has announced the sad death of its last Amur leopard. The zoo near Coldon Common announced on its Facebook page this morning that Akin has died following deteriorating health associated with his old age. A post on the zoo's Facebook page said, "Born at Olomouc Zoo in the Czech Republic on the 19th of May 2001, Akin arrived at Marwell Zoo aged 1 year in May 2002. As part of the EAZA Ex Situ Programme, an endangered species breeding programme, Akin has sired 6 healthy cubs, and one of his daughters, Kanika, who left us in 2016, recently gave birth to a female cub at Santa Barbara Zoo in California. Akin, at 20, was a majestic, fearless leopard who loved lazing around in the afternoon sun. For 19 years, our guests have been awestruck by his beauty and strength. Akin will be sorely missed by his keepers and everyone who knew him." It added, "Marwell is no longer home to Amur leopards. Please bear with us while we consider a new species for the habitat." The picture that accompanies this does indeed show a most magnificent leopard's face.
MP urges take-up of boosters. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond is urging people to get their COVID booster and flu jabs. The advertising blitz to encourage take-up runs from this week on billboards, broadcast and community radio and TV to support the national vaccine drive. Colder weather favours transmission of both viruses, and experts have warned there could be a significant surge in infections. One TV advert asks people to get vaccinated, get boosted, get protected, and features Michelle, an NHS nurse, explaining the benefits of the flu jab and COVID booster vaccine. The brilliant vaccine rollout this year has made a huge difference to rates of serious illness and hospitalisation from COVID. But now we are entering the crucial winter months, it is vital that those who are eligible for a COVID booster jab get one, said Ms. Drummond. Experts are also very concerned that we have much less immunity from the flu virus due to a lack of contact over the last year and a half, so that the same message to get a flu jab really does apply too. Acting now and getting these jabs will save lives and ease pressure on the NHS during these crucial winter months. I also believe it could be the difference to whether we need any further COVID restrictions. People eligible for the COVID booster are those aged 50 and over, and those aged 16 and over with a health condition that puts them at high risk from COVID. The government has also launched the country's biggest flu programme in history, with 35 million people eligible, mostly aged over 50, for a free vaccine. People will be invited for the booster jab, but if they have not been contacted within a week of 6 months since their second jab, they can call 119 or book online.
Deputy Lord Lieutenant visits local guides group. Kingsworthy Girl Guiding was visited by the Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Professor Joy Carter, last week to thank them for all the work they had done in lockdown to raise spirits. In her address to the guides, the Deputy Lord Lieutenant explained how she herself had been a recipient of a random act of kindness when she returned home one day to find a pot of daffodils on her doorstep. She reflected how overwhelmed she had been by this act and had been sent to pass on thanks to Girl Guiding in the Worthies. Guide Hannah Pye, 11, who spent time talking to Prof Carter, said, "It was great to hear how she had a meal with the Queen and that she thought the Queen had a great sense of humour." During the lockdowns, Rainbows, Brownies, Guides and Rangers across Kingsworthy completed various challenges set by their leaders to raise spirits in the community, ranging from pots of bulbs, Christmas cards to residential homes, drawings to a local bus company, and more recently, sprucing up Winchester Prison Garden. Leader Isabel Haig stated, "Being an active part of our community and spreading Girl Guiding cheer is an important element of our programme. We are really proud how our girls rose to the challenge, and it was lovely for their work to be recognised in this way." And that article's also accompanied by a photograph of the Kingsworthy Guides, flanked on one side by Lord Lieutenant Professor Joy Carter and Isabel Haig and her other helpers.
Villagers praise for now closed post office. Residents from a village near Winchester have been full of praise for a recently closed post office for their services throughout the past year. The post office inside the convenience store in Waltham Chase has been closed at various points over the last year, with it last being open in August. Residents of the village have told the Chronicle and have said on social media how important the post office was for the local community throughout lockdown. Waltham Chase resident Dennis Findlay said, "When we went into lockdown one, Adrian and his small team were a true lifeline to the Waltham Chase community and were applauded for their efforts." The post office has been a fixture of community life in Waltham Chase for many years. Adrian also provided counter-service employment and general help employment for local young people who could not get to college or go to their workplace. Even though the office is currently closed, the village convenience store itself remains open. Before the most recent closure, one resident said, "The least we can do for them now is to shop there and support them. Remember, it really is a case of use it or lose it." The same resident explained how the post office staff organised food deliveries during the pandemic for those who were self-isolating. A post office spokesperson said, "Waltham Chase Post Office is temporarily closed due to operational reasons. We apologise for any inconvenience this may cause. We are working to restore service as soon as possible. In the interim, alternative branches include Swanmore, Bishops Waltham and Wickham. Our area management team are aware of the situation at this branch and are working hard to identify a solution for the short-term and long-term future of post office services in this area."
New pharmacy opens at Winchester Hospital. Robots which automatically dispense medication is one of the features of a new pharmacy in Winchester. The pharmacy is inside the Royal County Hospital and had its official opening by Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, Steve Brine. The new pharmacy includes temperature-controlled environments and state-of-the-art equipment, including two robots which handle the safe storage, rotation and dispensing of medications. There has also been investment in technology to allow for the tracking of medicines through the pharmacy and onto the wards. The robots automatically generate stock order replacements and can be accessed by pharmacists from home to dispense emergency drugs out of hours, allowing specialist pharmacy staff to spend more time directly supporting patients. Nicola Jones, chief pharmacist at Hampshire Hospital, said, "We are incredibly excited to officially open the doors to our new pharmacy in Winchester, and I am really proud of the whole team who made this happen and dealt with the challenges the pandemic brought to this project head on. As well as the many benefits to our patients, we are delighted to also have improved training workspaces, enabling us to better support students and staff with face-to-face and digital learning." Alex Whitfield, chief executive at Hampshire Hospital, said, "We are really excited that we are able to see this improved facility in action. The new pharmacy is part of our ongoing investment in the future of our hospital in Winchester. It has improved the environment for our pharmacists to work in and enabled us to bring state-of-the-art technology to the trust. So much work went into the plans for the department, and I want to say a big thank you to all the teams involved. They managed to move the whole pharmacy across the hospital site while keeping a full service open for our patients and staff." Mr. Brine said, "I am so pleased to see the Trust deliver this new build, which brings to life the original plans drawn up to improve the previously dated facility."
Final preparations for next show of Operatic Society. A Winchester Opera Society are preparing their new musical performance at the Theatre Royal next month. A Chorus of Disapproval, performed by Winchester Musical Opera Society, WMOS, will be at Winchester Theatre Royal from November 10th to the 13th. The group's first performance at the theatre in 2 years is a play with music set in 1985, which tells the story of an amateur dramatics group putting on the Beggar's Opera. The story centres around Guy, played by James Ashby, who who appeared as Gabriel Utterson in 2019's Jekyll and Hyde. Guy auditions for the local amateur dramatic society and gets cast in a minor role. During the course of the play, Guy rises through the male roles, but he becomes entangled in the lives of the other members, such as Daffyth, the larger-than-life and oblivious director, played by Adrian Hickford, Faye, played by Katie Hickson, who seduces Guy at a dinner party, and Hannah, Daffyth's homely wife, who longs for a bit of romance, played by Annie Tatnall. The play is performed with songs from the Beggar's Opera and is full of jokes, 80s nostalgia and characters recognisable to anyone who has been involved in any kind of community group. The show came to the West End in 1985 with Michael Gambon playing the role of Daffyth, Bob Peck as Guy and Imelda Staunton as Hannah. It was more recently on the West End in 2012 when Rob Brydon played Daffyth. And that's accompanied by a couple of photos, one showing Guy, James Ashby, having a heart-to-heart across a table with Juliet Surridge, who plays Rebecca. And then there's another one showing Annie Tatnall as Hannah and James Ashby crouching down as Guy.
Uni graduation celebrations. University graduates celebrated their success last week in graduation ceremonies, which some had to wait a year for. The University of Winchester hosted its graduation ceremonies at Winchester Cathedral from October 19th to the 22nd, with over 2,000 graduates collecting their awards. The university also awarded honorary doctorates and fellowships to prominent public figures to recognise them in their fields of expertise. The nine ceremonies were presided over by Chancellor of the University, Alan Titchmarsh. The Reverend Professor Elizabeth Stewart said, "I am always incredibly proud of our graduates and I'm looking forward to celebrating their success at graduation." Among the recipients of the honorary awards was professional quizzer and Winchester resident Kevin Ashman, and the picture actually shows Alan Titchmarsh presenting Kevin Ashman with his award.
Nature Reserve boosting local biodiversity. A new nature reserve close to a major housing development in Winchester is boosting local biodiversity. Barton Meadows was created in 2017 on 35 hectares of farmland next to the King's Barton scheme of 2,000 houses to the north of Winchester. Hampshire Wildlife Trust area manager Nick Reed Beale told the King's Barton Forum the land had been subjected to intensive agriculture with nitrates and phosphate fertiliser. The two large fields between Worthy Road and Wellhouse Lane and east of the railway have now been reseeded with wildflowers and managed for conservation value. Mr. Reed Beale said, "It is a pretty place to go in late spring and early summer when the flowers are up and the insects are whirring. We hear mostly good things from residents." He said there had been a significant boost to biodiversity, with many species returning, including brown hares, skylarks, badgers, owls, and 12 of the UK's 18 species of bat. The land is being managed with grazing, involving sheep and cattle. Forum chairman Anne Weir said of the meadows this spring, "The butterflies and moths were extraordinary. The only time I have experienced anything like it was in South America. I have never seen such life present." One problem in its increasing popularity is seeing greater public use, including vehicles of 2 and 4 wheels. Mr. Reed Beale said, "We have had gates broken down. which cost the best part of £1,000 to fix because people want access for mountain bikes, motorbikes and, dare I say it, vehicles. It is important we keep an eye on that. There are also calls for the paths to be improved and made more accessible to everyone. Mr. Reed Beale said surfacing the 3.2 kilometres of paths would cost around £100,000. The Wildlife Trust is currently managing the land for Callagh Homes, but will become legal tenants when ownership is transferred to the City Council. The Trust manages several sites in and around Winchester, including Winnall Moors, St Catherine's Hill, St Cross and St Faith's Meadows.
Tractor Run. Young farmers will host their annual Tractor Run, covering parts of the Winchester district in aid of charity this weekend. On Saturday, the South East Hants Young Farmers will start in Bishop's Waltham and cover around 35 miles. This year, their chosen charity is the MS Society, as one of its advisory members has recently been diagnosed with the disease. The organisation has said that it would love to see as many people as possible along the route. The run will aim to leave at 11 a.m, passing through the High Street at 11:15 a.m, before making its way to Wickham Square at around 11:45. The timetable continues to Mix Monster Burgers on Portsdown Hill at approximately 12:45, Southwark High Street around 1:20, Denmead at approximately 1:45, Hambledon at approximately 2:10, and Meonstoke at around 2:30 p.m. The group hopes to raise £1,000.
Driver jailed after high-speed chase. A cannabis user led officers on a pursuit through Winchester villages before slamming into the rear of a police car. Adam Robertson was spotted by police on the A34 close to Whitchurch in a Vauxhall Movano van, looking nervous on March the 13th. Officers attempted to pull Robertson over by illuminating their "follow me" signs, but at the last minute he indicated off at Bullington Cross. Police were able to follow. The 31-year-old travelled along the A30 Bullington Lane and continued on to Sutton Scotney, before coming back onto the A30 and at some points driving at 70 miles an hour when the speed limit was 50. In a bid to lose police, Robinson turned into Wanston Lane, which is a single track, but hit a curb, and his van was described as bouncing down the road. Siobhan Lindsley, prosecuting, told Winchester Crown Court on Friday, "The original police car was joined by a second vehicle who tried to make tactical contact with the defendant's van, but it was insufficient to cause the driver to stop. Robertson then sped through Stoke Charity and Mitchell Dever at 70 miles per hour, again the speed limit being 50. The roads throughout these villages were described as narrow, rural lanes, occasionally single track. There was no opportunity for evasion for other oncoming vehicles, given the speed that the defendant was going at. The chase finally came to an end in Mitchell Dever Station when Robertson was boxed in by the police. The defendant, instead of slowing, in fact, tried to get the car out of the way and hit the back of the police vehicle." Excuse me. Miss Lindley added, "The defendant had no regard for the safety of the officer who was in the car. He admitted that he had smoked a joint and had some cannabis, and he was found to have 5 micrograms per litre of blood of the drug, when the legal limit is 2. Robertson of Greenacres Ring, Angmering, Littlehampton, pleaded guilty to failing to stop when required by a constable, dangerous driving and drug driving while at the magistrate's court.
Developer does what he wants. Planners have approved retrospective changes to a mansion near Winchester, despite hearing that the owner had repeatedly broken planning conditions. The planning committee narrowly voted to allow the changes at Abbotsworthy House, owned by Mr. K. Lakpuri. They included clear glass instead of obscure in top floor windows and plastic guttering instead of cast iron. Initial plans were rejected by the planning committee but allowed on appeal. Now the developer has not adhered to the conditions imposed by the planning committee. By the planning inspector, the committee heard. Neighbour Juliet Howland said planning conditions had, since the development started in 2018, been repeatedly ignored. He has changed so much again and again. Local city councillor Steve Cramoisan, who represents the Worthies, said, "The developer should be expected to do what has been agreed. Neighbours should not have to monitor the situation to establish the plans are being adhered to, nor have to go through the stress of putting up a fight when the developer goes off plan." He said the developer had shown a pattern of behaviour of doing what he wants and dealing with the planning process later. Most use it the right way. A minority seem hell-bent on undermining trust and integrity of the planning process. One has to wonder what is going to happen next. Nobody attended the planning committee to speak in support of the application. The application attracted 8 objections and 1 in support, saying the owner was bringing a dilapidated house back to life. Councillor Jane Rutter, who represents the Worthies, told the committee, "There is bad feeling between the neighbours already and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better soon." The clear windows will now be in bedrooms instead of the previously agreed bathroom. Councillor Rutter said the curtains would be drawn at night. "I can see no harm and you would have to have harm. The best thing would be for the householder to finish the development and tidy up the whole site." The committee was split 4 votes each, and Chairman Therese Evans cast her vote in favour of the application.
Pumpkin Festival raises over £1,500. A pumpkin festival in a village near Winchester raised over £1,500 for a local charity. Twyford Pumpkin Festival was held on October the 11th at the Bugle Inn. The event raised £1,558.37 for the Twyford Playgroup, which is a group for preschool children in the local community. Seska Carr Roberts, chair of the playgroup and co-owner of the Bugle, organised her team and ran children's and adults' entertainment with face painting, henna tattoos and pin the tail on the pumpkin. Bugle chef Lenny Carr Roberts and his staff provided pumpkin soup and hot dogs for all. Local resident Mike Sharp said, "Well, that went well." Special mention to Dave and his band of merry men for instigating and driving the event, Lenny for hosting and catering, and Seska and her playgroup team for putting so much on for the children. It was a tight call in the main event, with only 1 kilogram separating the top 3 pumpkins. But there would only be 1 winner and, with a touch of serendipity, that was our very own Ingrid Percival with her 26-kilogram monster. Ingrid's late husband, Dr. Richard Percival, was a driving force of the original Twyford Pumpkin Festival and took the trophy on a number of occasions before being taken from us too early. Another resident, Ali Davis, said, "Such a wonderful event. I love being part of this community. We aim to run the festival again next year with even more activities, hopefully including line dancing, auctions and more. And guess what? There's a picture of a bunch of pumpkins and people standing around drinking beer behind it.
This isn't nearly so much fun. Roads blocked after rainfall. Residents across Winchester woke up on Thursday last week to find the aftermath of heavy rainfall that swept the county overnight. Drivers faced closed roads, and Hampshire Highways crews dealt with flooding and debris throughout the night and into the next morning. Bus services were disrupted in Sparsholt, as Woodman Lane, near the Plough Inn, was blocked in both directions due to a fallen tree. Stagecoat tweeted, "Due to the fallen tree between the Plough Public House and Sparsholt Turning, all services will divert to and from Sparsholt Village using Westley Lane and not serve Sparsholt Village Stores shop. Customers can catch the bus opposite the Sparsholt Church." Earlier in the day, a tree fall on the A334 Wickham Road, blocking both directions. The tree has now been cleared. Hampshire Highways reported that it had had crews out all night dealing with the impact of the heavy rainfall, including flooding and clearing tree and hedge debris across the roads. On Wednesday evening, Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Fire and Rescue Services said they received over 120 calls, mostly due to weather.
City Council honoured again for outstanding animal welfare services. So, another item connected with dogs. Winchester City Council has been honoured with a prestigious award for their outstanding work with stray dogs and the licensing of animal establishments. The RSPCA has awarded the authority's animal welfare team their 10th Gold Paw Print Award in 5 years to recognise their continued efforts on the front line of animal welfare, despite the COVID-19 pandemic, lockdowns and a significant rise in dog ownership over the past 2 years. Team members Dave Griffiths and Ross Shepherd were both recognised for going above and beyond for their work protecting, rehoming and returning stray dogs to their owners and ensuring establishments are providing excellent care for animals. In a joint statement, Dave and Ross said, "We are so honoured to have achieved this recognition from the RSPCA Gold Paw Prints Award scheme. The past 18 months have been challenging on the front line of animal welfare, and it is wonderful to have our care and determination awarded." Councillor Linda Murphy, Winchester City Council Cabinet Member, said, "We are extremely proud to have achieved the gold standard from RSPCA for the 10th time running. The award recognises the hard work and dedication from the Council's animal welfare team to maintain the highest standards consistently despite the pandemic. During the national restrictions, dog ownership has soared, and this award underscores the brilliant work done by this team under difficult circumstances. I know how important animal welfare is to our residents, and I am pleased to see the team demonstrating their commitment to the health and happiness of our pets." Rachel Williams, Senior Parliamentary Advisor at the RSPCA, said, "We're delighted that Winchester City Council's high standards of animal welfare service provision have continued, despite the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, with the local authority continuing to go above and beyond for stray dogs and in its licensing of local animal establishments. The RSPCA's Paw Prints scheme is all about paying tribute to those teams who too often don't get the recognition they deserve. The exceptional work of Dave Griffiths, Ross Shepherd and the rest of the team at Winchester City Council is doing so much to ensure high standards of animal welfare in the local community. And there's a picture of the two members of the animal welfare team, Dave Griffiths and Ross Shepherd, standing by their white van. It says animal welfare on the side, and they each have two beautiful dogs.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams. Goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory stick back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.